some LVMs, physical volumes, could also be individual partitions or a software RAID device. You can get some complicated stacks, also called physical extents. A typical extent size is 4 megabytes. Now, you then take these extents and you glue them together to form a logical volume, put together with those extents over there, and that forms a particular logical volume. And at that level, an LVM is sort of acting as a high-level file system, except instead of addressing blocks, you're addressing these in which you then put a file system in. So basically, an LVM is just an additional layer of indirection. And as we all know, any problem in computer science can... The LVM knows what the elevator algorithm is going to do and will arrange the data through, say, RAID 1 striping so that the right simplifying assumptions. People have actually suggested some advanced techniques where instead of actually storing blocks on disks, that you could actually have these things called object-based disks, blocks long. Put it on the disk where it makes sense and actually leave layout decisions to the hard drive itself, right? Because the hard drive, even the hard drive, can actually do a much better job laying out files than a file system can. Why don't we do that? A couple of reasons. Number one, once you do that, it's no longer possible to do RAID easily because RAID sort of assumes a regular, just isn't going away anytime soon. And the hard drive vendors that do this object-based disks, one, charge a lot of money for it. And the commodity cheap stuff is all mostly do the right thing. And hard drives are fast enough that people don't care when every once in a while you've got a hiccup and things are out of place. But for example, if you've got a TiVo and you're reading a video stream, and people just sort of accept that, right? Whether or not they should is a different question. Any other questions? Okay, so Pagan. That was used in 2.4. It was removed with extreme prejudice in 2.5. My mom used to say if you had nothing nice to say about a person or some code, don't say anything at all. So EVMS was one of two possible contenders. EVMS was done by IBM. There were patches that were done for 2.4 and availed formats, not just the old LVM1 metadata format, but also AIX LVMs as well as OS2. And that was because IBM had a whole bunch of customers, particularly in Germany, that were you, and so it was useful to have an LVM that could actually support that so you could actually migrate them off to a more modern OS. EVMS could also create site. IBM did all this work and then sort of submitted it, and people sort of looked at the huge patch, and it never went in. What went in instead of that was this thing called the device mapper interface. And that's what's in Linux, essentially pure user space applications that use the device mapper interface. And so LVM2 and EVMS2 will basically fit information into the device mapper. And basically the device mapper was the smallest possible kernel side implementation that would actually support LVM. Only gotcha with that was that the original device mapper interface was so simple. And I can't remember off the top of my head whether or not those have actually made it into mainline 2.6 yet, but the patches are there. Or the LVM layer. So next I'm going to just very, very quickly talk about file systems. So file systems are basically your next level on top of the stack. So just as the particular files. There are two types of file systems. You've got your disk-based file systems, and your network-based file systems. For the purposes of this systems, three major categories. You've got the old file allocation table, which are the MS-DOS file systems, inode-based file systems, and there's actually a whole category of other stuff that you might do. I'll talk about what it looks like. So the FATFATE file system is just a fun one to talk about because it's so simple. Thanks to the... is essentially just simply an array. And depending on whether you have FAT16 or FAT32, will tell you whether the element in the array is either 16 bits long or 32 bits long. So the disk is divided into clusters, Which is basically Windows words for block. So I'll use blocks just because that's easier than clusters. You'll index into that array, and if you look at block number 100, the entry in that array for block number 100 will tell you where the next block in that cluster chain might be. If it's 0101, and then we can read block 101, look at the entry 101 in the file allocation table array, and if that says 102, then we know. So both files and directories are just simply cluster chains, so it's just simply the linked list. And so in order to access a file or directory, you just simply have to know the first cluster, and then you can just... Each directory entry will just simply contain the first cluster for each file or directory. Now, one of the things that this actually points out is that random... but if you have a very, very long file and you want to go backwards... the only way you can actually go backwards is to start from the beginning of the disk and march forward again, beginning of the linked list and march forward. And this is one of the disasters, and probably the more important one, is the fact that we always start from the beginning of the disk. And so when we want to allocate a free block, what the fat files, and they'll use that block to allocate. And so once you start getting some file fragmentation, your file system generally tends to get more and more fragmented quite rapidly. So there are a couple of different, questions. You could actually do sort of best fit, but the file system structure better. Any other questions? Okay. So I've already talked about FAT16, FAT32, which was just simply the size of the cluster, the size of the entry in the file allocation table, much different. So I'm not gonna worry about that. You could actually use FAT16 with larger disks because you could use a larger is 2 bytes long. You'll end up using 64K of disk space, and that will cause you to waste a lot of disk space. Of course, all modern systems essentially support FAT16 and FAT32. The main place where we actually tended to only support FAT16, and so there was this issue where if you were using an older digital camera, you might not be able to use, except for that caveat, no one else really cared about that particular distinction. The other major FAT variant that I'll talk about is what we in the Linux world call VFAT. Call it VFAT is actually more related to the first time the long file name feature appeared in Windows. Had the 16-bit part of the OS and the virtual 32-bit version of the OS, and it was basically two halves of the system for backwards compatibility. And if you use the protected mode interface, the 32-bit, that's the name that we use internally in our file system types. But like I said, that's really more of an accident to where that feature actually first appeared, as opposed to overturned by the U.S. Patent Office about storing long file names in old FAT directory entries for backwards compatibility. Yeah, question? Oh, you're right. The clusters 0 through 15 actually have magic meanings. I didn't know that they were using the high bits for something special, but I assume that's why they only go up to 2 to the 28. But FAT file systems, the only reason why I talk about them is because they're simple and because they're still with us. Modern day file systems are essentially all inode. It's essentially an inode-based file system, although it's a bit further removed from the original Unix BSD fast file system and its derivatives. Yeah. B3 uses a B-tree for everything, One of the reasons why I'm a little systems, the inode table is fixed in memory. It's fixed on the disk. And this is useful because if your disk gets corrupted, it's very easy to find the inode table and stitch the system back together. That tells you where to find the rest of the inode table. But at least they actually back it up. What RiserFS does is the inodes are actually stored inside. What the RiserFS consistency checker has to do if that B tree gets corrupted, is crawl the entire disk looking for blocks that look like they might be part of the B tree. I don't know B4 enough to make a categorical statement about that, but I believe that to be true in B4 as well. The reason why this, at least, image files of other RiseRFS file systems. Force a corruption and then run the consistency checker. Somewhere I have a saved email message of someone who was complaining about robustness problems with RiseRFS, and Hans finally said, well, if you want, don't like, you know, there's this huge amount of perceived competition between EXD3 and RiseRFS, and usually I don't go into that, but every once in a while I get provoked. But some people really like RiseRFS at that. Yeah, and it was first with online resizing. There were different file systems have different underlying philosophies that are sort of at the small files and whatnot, and RiseRFS is designed around that particular design philosophy. XFS has a design philosophy which is really, that's what it is in SGI, and when they had to transplant it to Linux, it sort of brought huge portions of the SGI VM with it. And they've been, you know, since simplifying it, but that sort of explained where XFS was coming from. EXC2, another feature, which is one of the reasons why we were slower to adopt some of the more advanced features, and we cared very much about backwards compatibility. And that was sort of the driving feature of scalable than some of the competition, and if that's what you care about, you know, XFS might be the right file system for you. Yeah. Yep. For the entire world like RiseRFS, but I'm not an expert in it. I think they actually use separate B-trees for each directory. I mean, I never claimed that my scheme was in fact complete. But, you know, these were the major ones that I was planning on talking about. So yes, you could include, and there are all sorts of different ones. I mean, base file systems is really big because it essentially came from V7 Unix. Then you had the BSD fast file system that elaborated on that. SGI XFS is probably the longest in terms of farthest removed, while still retaining that, you know, sort of ancestral genetic heritage. NTFS V5 basically uses the... How different is EXT2 from the BSD system? I'll talk about that in just a little bit. So I wasn't actually going to say a whole lot more. I think I have one slide on it later on. So I'll cover it a little bit. For most of this talk, I'm really, when we start going into how do we actually recover from file system detail about it. Okay, let me move on. I want to try to get a bit further in. So the primary characteristic of a fast file system is file system metadata. And one of the things that this allows you to do is to have hard links. Two directory entries that point at the same inode. This was not the case in the FAT file system, where the directory name and the starting cluster location and the mod time, that's really sort of the key sort of innovation that we got from V7 Unix and is sort of derived from there. In general, but they at least back up the initial part of the inode table, so if you lose, you know, one part of the block, you can still find everything else. What the BSD fast file system added was the division as well. That's another example of you can just sort of see those sort of design heritage just sort of carry on. Original fast file systems would use a simple linked list, but the original version just simply used the standard linked list. So this is what an EXT2 file system looks like. We've got the boot sector at the very beginning, and then we'll have some number of block groups. Block and inode bitmap, as well as the inode table, and then the rest of the block group consists of data blocks. So someone asked an older file system. It was back in the days where people still thought that we could pretend to know something about the geometry of hard drives. So instead of block groups, they actually called them cylinder groups in the fast file system. The other system descriptors distort the location of all of the block and inode bitmaps as well as the inode table. All of this information is redundancy. In the BSD fast file system, you don't have the block group descriptors. Instead, each super block contains the location of the block and inode bitmap. The problem we ran into is because we actually have to have a varying number of blocks storing the block group descriptors for really large file systems beginning, so we didn't notice the order n squared behavior right away. And so what we had to do is we had to add an extension to ext2 so that in modern ext2 file systems, we use a complicated algorithm, which I won't be of the super block and the block group descriptors, to avoid that order n explosion, order n squared explosion of overhead. Because basically, we'll modify the scheme later on. But the scheme is nice because there's a lot more redundancy about where to actually find the inode table. And that's really important, because if you can't find the inode table when you're trying to recover a file system, you're basically sunk, right? If you lose the inode table, you lose. And later on, I'll talk about a technique that we can now use to back up the inode table. Can give you a lot more robustness in your... pretty straightforward, and this is essentially essentially the same as a BSD fast file system. Except I believe the BSD fast file system only has 10 direct blocks and we have 12, which is, you know, not a big difference, not a big deal. Permission mode, some number of direct blocks, and then when those fill, you'll have an indirect block, and the indirect store 10,024 block pointers in your indirect block. And if you have greater than, if you overflow the 12 direct blocks and the 1024 indirect blocks, and you have to allocate a double indirect block where the single double indirect block, so on and so forth. And then for the really, really big files, you may actually spill over into the block groups are, the block groups are basically based on the size of the block bitmap. The block bitmap is exactly one block long. So if you're using a 1K block size, for example, group is limited to 8K blocks. If you're using a 4K block size, the default is 32K blocks in a block group. And since it's 32K 4K blocks, it basically is 131 megs. One of the problems that you will run into with this particular scheme is when you get to triple indirect blocks, you end up having to read from double indirect block is actually cached in memory. But in the worst case, yes, you end up having to do these extra the extra reads before you can actually get to the final block. The other potential problem that it's overhead. Another downside of this particular scheme is if you need to delete a really, really big file. Suppose you have a DVD image file and you need to delete it. You have to iterate over all of the indirect blocks and double indirect. We have been looking at schemes to avoid this particular problem in future versions of ext2. Yeah, the first parts are faster. I mean, in practice, you don't notice it because once it's in your page cache, it's logically indexed. And so for the Emacs executable that's, permanently in your page cache, because everybody uses Emacs, right? It doesn't matter, right? Caching hides an awful lot of that, right? So the first time you read something where you have to read... It does, although it turns out the limitation isn't actually based on that. It's actually based on the fact that we are currently using a 4-byte field for the size. The 4-byte field that is, in fact, the real problem is the 4-byte field of the number of blocks. I-size, in fact, which is also stored essentially for historical reasons, is limited to 32 bits at the moment. And we can expand that, and there's been talk about that to support the really, really big files. Up until 2.6, 64-bit addressing, we're now sort of exposing. Yes, it is. Again, that limitation has been lifted in 2.6, and for EXT2, there were some bugs that were turned up that are now, so that means that the theoretical limit is now 16 terabytes. Found some bugs that we had to fix. So, you know, some of the older kernels would run into problems above 2 terabytes, even after 2.6 sort of lifted that, just because, you know, there were bugs that were exposed. But at the moment, the theoretical limit for EXT2 is 16 terabytes. Again, watch this space for, you know, few. Essentially, you have the directory here on the right. Inode number, straightforward. For large directories, this became a bottleneck because you would have to read all the directory entries to find what you want. Modern file systems sort of departed from this traditional fast file system design in a couple of different ways. I've already mentioned the dynamically allocated inode table, but one of the big things that you'll see in all of these modern file systems, we've just run into 11 o'clock, so why don't we take our morning tea break, and when we come back, I'll go into more detail about some of these other file systems. Whether you're using a 1K block size or a 4K block size, the number of inode is stored in the super block.
T40.
And they may see, oh, you've got Milo there.
Right.
That looks all wrong. Well, covered by completely trash. So I just simply bought mine, and that's my pure Linux disk, and then I have my Windows disk.
Right.
In case that you need Windows for some stupid reason,
right,
like say flashing a new BIOS update or some such, the easiest thing to do is you just simply slam it into the Ultra Bay, and then you can set up LILO to boot into it.
Unfortunately, I can't get it to really special.
Whatever.
Exactly. The only thing I use it for, but it's kind of cool because it's
it doesn't actually make that much difference because if nothing else, you're copying it into the page cache, right? So,
and in Australia we have a real problem because in Australia it's been told by the courts that a copyright law copying into RAM counts as an infringement of copyright.
Right, yeah. So,
we have a real serious problem with that.
Yes.
Because GPL topic it doesn't infringe how you may use the software.
Yeah.
In Australia it does.
Can you access the kickoff yourself at the laboratory?
I assume there'll be someone sort of
herding people.
Okay.